Blog Talk Radio.
Sunday night, and that means it's time for Stunt Treks with the Leslie Hoffman and yours truly, Uncle Jim. And we have a really fun show planned for you guys tonight. We're going to delve off of our usual meanderings, which usually lead us to Planet of the Apes in one form or another. Don't ask me how, but we always end up there, right, Leslie? It just happened. We're not even going to talk about stunt eggs or even stunt tribbles tonight. Tonight, we have a special show for you guys.
Yeah.
good friends of the show, John Lim and John Mr. Sulu Lim and Andy Mr. Chekhov Ray are going to be with us. They have a brand new Star Trek book out called Making More Fake Star Trek. And yes, if you're wondering, making more... They had to make some in the first place to make more, right? Absolutely correct. Their first book was called Making Fake Star Trek, and this one's called Making More Fake Star Trek. It just released on Valentine's Day, and we're going to be chatting a little bit about that book and where they got the idea from, what it was like to work on Star Trek New Voyages, meeting George, meeting Walter, all that great stuff. We're going to delve really deep into that. So first I want to say hello to Leslie. How you doing tonight, Leslie?
I'm doing okay. Boy, you can't tell the weather from moment to moment. I mean, today's been a really, really nice day, but a couple days ago I think we had minus 18.
Wow. Yeah, We had some cold here up here in Vermont, but with the wind chill, it might have been minus 12 maybe ish. But yesterday it was a heat wave. It was 18 degrees out. So that was like open up your windows and put on your t-shirts. It's a heat wave.
Right.
So, you know, when it gets around 20, you're like, oh my God, it's beautiful out. Boy, we're sick and twisted
right
up in this part of the country, aren't we?
Well, I'm still waiting to see if the groundhog is correct in that we're going to have an early winter or early spring, whichever way you want to say it.
You know, I always wonder.
I don't know. That means we'll only have snow till May instead of June.
In time for Mother's Day. Like, is the groundhog like a meteorologist or something, for God's sakes? I mean, you know, how does he know what's going on? You got a crystal ball in the future or what? I don't know. But,
you know, I've never researched that. Is that like who came up with the idea that that if a groundhog sees a shadow and all that kind of stuff? I guess that's an interesting thing to Google, just to figure out who came up with this idea.
I think it's all the people that want you to go out and see Punxsutawney Phil so they can make a lot of money off of it, I guess. I don't know. It's just, we ought to come up with our own if Leslie sees her shadow. We'll do something like that.
If a stunt triple sees its shadow.
Yes, there you go. Is he going to be on Planet of the Apes?
Right.
And we also have joining us tonight the one and only Admiral Ken. He's all the way down in Albany, New York. How you doing tonight, Ken?
And we had a heat wave today. We were up to like 37.
Oh, my God. Did you open up your window? Turn on the air conditioning?
Really, that's what I said. My windows are cracked right now. I mean, really, it's like, I mean, you know, this is like balmy. I'm sitting here shirtless.
It's just a matter of perspective, I guess, you know. When you're used to 20 below zero with the wind chill factor, 40 is like a heat wave, you know.
Oh, yeah, but, no. If you were in Los Angeles and it was, let's say, 60 degrees, you'd be wearing your winter coat or you'd have the heat on or something.
Yeah, just a quick funny story. When we took Jamie out to Universal Studios when they opened up the Harry Potter world there, we were staying at the Hard Rock right there at Universal. And when we left here in Albany, at the Albany Airport, we had 8 feet of snow. It was 22 degrees below zero. We got down to California, we got out to Florida, and we step off the plane at the airport, and it was 70. And we're like, oh, my God, we're so hot. We had on hats and gloves and cars and everything else. We get to the hotel, and the first thing we did was go in the pool because to us, you know, 70 was beautiful. And they're running around in hats and coats. And we're like, dude, I'm just sitting in the hot tub bubbling away under the palm trees thinking this is the life. And they're running around freezing. So I guess it's just a matter of perspective, I guess.
Absolutely.
But we also, like I said, we're going to be talking about making more fake Star Trek. And for that, we're going to talk to John Sulu Lim. How you doing tonight, John?
Hey, Jim. How you doing? How you doing, Leslie? I'm doing great. Thank you all for having me here tonight.
Oh, you're always welcome. Thank you for calling Thursday night and saying hello. It was great to hear from both of you guys.
Absolutely. Absolutely. No, it's always a pleasure. And Andy will be joining us in a few minutes. So I think he's just coming off work. But, I was just listening to you talk about the weather. So I'm in the D.C. area, and it was in the 50s today, and it felt so warm. I was like, this is spring weather. I can't believe it. And this has been such a kooky winter.
Isn't that weird when what we consider to be nice weather and what we consider to be cold weather, it's just a matter of perspective, I guess. You
absolutely.
Know?
Absolutely. But, yeah, and Leslie's absolutely right. I used to live in Los Angeles, and 60 would be people would be putting on their layers. So it really is a matter of perspective.
Yeah, we were sitting in my wife and daughter were in the pool, and I'm sitting in the hot tub, and we call the waitress to bring us out some sodas, and she comes out in a hat and a coat, and I'm like, it's 70 to get like 60, almost 70, it's like 65, 67 degrees out here. I'm like, we're the only ones in the pool, and you're running around with hats and coats and gloves? My God. But anyways. So you guys have a brand new book out, right, called Making More Fake Star Trek. Now, we had Andy on the show not last Thursday, but the Thursday before. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, mm-hmm. or fortunately, I guess, depending on how you want to look at it, he said that he really only had two lines in that particular episode.
Yeah.
It was
three.
This episode was all about you. So.
He had three lines in World Enough in Time, and that's something we cover in the book. Early on, World Enough of Time, and Leslie will tell you, was a really ambitious shoot. It was a beautiful story, but it was also a very tumultuous time. And one of the things that Andy had to deal with was the fact that coming off of To Serve All My Days and covered in our first book, Andy had the spotlight. He had the co-starring role opposite Walter Koenig. And then all of a sudden, he's basically reduced to a cameo. So in this book, his story is about... you know, what does he do? I mean, how does he make his time in Port Henry worthwhile? Because we're up there for 2.5 weeks. And so that's part of his story. And then obviously my story was with Sulu in the spotlight with George. I had a much bigger role in this episode. So it's almost like we flip-flopped going from book one to book two.
Now, Andy did tell us a little story on Thursday that when you guys showed up out there and he told us you got to buy the book or talk to John. And guess what? We're talking to John. So there you have it. He told us a story about they weren't happy with you as the director wasn't happy with you as Sulu because you didn't look
that's
like
right.
Sulu.
Yeah,
and he wanted you to wear a George mask or something. They wanted you to wear a prosthetic.
There were several ideas. And in fact, book two starts off towards the end of book one. We were doing reshoots for To Serve All My Days, and that's when we got this. It was over an April weekend, and we got the news about the next episode and the new director coming aboard, and everyone was really excited. I mean, we hadn't even finished filming Walter's episode yet, and then all of a sudden we're going to be doing an episode with George. And so, that was one of the first things that challenges was that the director wasn't quite happy with me at Sulu, and he had several ideas, one of which was to recast the role. The other was, and he had actually batted this idea of actually having George play both roles, the young Sulu and the what we call the alternate, what we call Barbarian Sulu. We affectionately refer to him as Barbarian Sulu. And, the director was batting around ideas such as de-aging and makeup. And then it was settled that I was basically New Voyages Sulu, and the producers were pretty much like, no, that's non-negotiable. And the director wanted to actually put me in prosthetics to make me look like George. And I don't know if Leslie knows this story, but I actually flew out to LA because I had to do, table read with George. I also had to audition actresses to play Chandra's. But one of the things that the director had me do was get fitted for a life mask so that they could put prosthetics on me. And they actually created this whole elaborate set of makeup. And the idea was that for the scenes that I was in, I was going to be covered in prosthetics, which would make me look more like a young George. And it was the most bizarre thing. The cool part was getting made up by John Bullich, who was a legend, the late John Bullich, a legend in sci-fi television and films. I mean, he won an Emmy for his work. He's one of the most talented makeup artists, in the business. So I don't want to take anything away from him, but the challenge of making somebody look like a completely different person, because, George and I, we don't have a strong physical resemblance, but making someone look like someone else, that's really challenging to do. And so that was the plan. And to find out what happens, you'll have to read about it in the book. But yes, that is one of the stories that is laid out in book two.
Now, part of the things about that makes fan films so fun is a lot of times you'll see people writing their own film and playing Captain Kirk that look absolutely nothing like Captain Kirk.
Right, right.
So it's like it's a fan film. It's not a real film, So what's the big deal? I don't see the big deal.
It's so interesting you mentioned that, because that's a big part of what this book goes into. Was for the people who were involved in New Voyages from the beginning, there was a little bit of tension because we had people who'd been involved from the beginning, and it was always seen as something to do for fun. It was a fan film. I think once Walter got involved with To Serve All My Days, and then you had a script by DC Fontana, that's when you start to see things really, really step up a notch. And then with World Enough in Time, you had this Hollywood director coming in with his own crew and with his own camera people and with his own producers. And I think his goal was to really make a Star Trek episode rather than a New Voyages episode. I mean, he really saw this as his kind of calling card to become a director and to direct feature films. Or as we cover in the book, I think one of the ideas that he had was to use this as a backdoor pilot, maybe pitch it as a backdoor pilot for a Captain Sulu series. So that's one of the themes that actually we cover in the second book, and it's a very interesting one because, as you mentioned, Jim, I mean, the whole idea of a fan film is that it's a group of passionate fans who really, really want to play Star Trek, and that's really what at the core of it is, and that's why I got involved. But, you know, Andy got cast through Walter, and that's when the lines start to blur. And we covered this in our first book. We carry that through in our second book. There was a blurred line between, is this a fan film or is this something a little bit more resembling a professional Hollywood production with all of these people, many of whom, like Leslie, worked on the real show. So, I mean, it was an interesting time. And you just had so many people, fans, but as well as Hollywood professionals, who had worked on a lot of the spin-off series and even some of the people who worked on the original series coming in to do this project.
Well, we had Benny Hall on the show a couple of weeks ago because when we do segments on fan films, the fans seem to really, really like that. So when we're done with Picard and we're looking into Discovery, we're going to start doing more segments on fan films. So we had Benny Hall on.
Oh, great.
And Benny Hall did a fan film called Let Old Wrinkles Come, where he plays Captain Kirk,
okay,
and he gets attacked by a Mugatu. Now, nothing against Benny, because we had him on the show, and he's a great guy, but he doesn't look like William Shatner at all. But it didn't detract from the enjoyment of his fan film.
Oh, yeah.
I thought it was fabulous. So I think there's a line there.
And if you look at New Voyages, for the most part, most of the cast did not resemble their original actor counterparts, with the possible exception. I mean, you know, a lot of fans have noted there's a strong resemblance between Andy and Walter. So there was that. But for the most part, most of the cast, didn't really look like their original counterparts. And you know what? If you look at the J.J. Abrams film, most of the actors who have stepped into those roles really don't have a strong physical resemblance to the original actors. So I think, if anything, fan films have proven that, you know, if you're passionate and you want to play Star Trek, there's no reason why you can't. There's no reason why you can't step into that role. That's the whole idea of being able to play in that universe.
But you guys, you and Andy, I think, are spectacular Chekhov suits.
Oh,
you know? I think you guys are great.
Thank you.
Yeah, there's Mr. Chekhov with us.
Hey, Andy, how you doing?
I arrived just in time for the compliment. Yes.
you got here just
Andy,
in time
you
to
all
talk
the insults,
about.
So now you're
we were just about to talk about your son and how famous he's become.
Oh, he's so much more famous than me. I know.
He's going to be Junior Chekhov. So
yeah,
he'll be the junior. So Leslie.
Yeah, when they do Star Trek babies.
There you go. When they do Star Trek babies, yep. Young Starfleet. Starfleet 90210. So, since we usually talk about stunts and things of that nature with Leslie because she was involved heavily in stunts, what kind of – did you guys perform any of your own stunts on New Voyages, or did Leslie step in and take care of all that for you guys?
Well, first I want to say
Leslie put on a Chekhov wig and did stunts for me.
And started talking in a while.
Leslie was amazing on both episodes. I mean, she did triple duty. I mean, she was, first of all, I mean, having stars like Walter and George on set, Leslie was pretty much the liaison for the guest stars, you know, having worked in the industry. But she coordinated the stunts. And if you look at World Enough in Time, there are a couple of really big scenes that require some very dangerous stunts. And so Leslie really just did a masterful job with that. In terms of Andy and I think our biggest stunts were on the bridge pyrotechnics. And so, we're shooting the bridge
really
scenes while there are explosions going off.
So, Leslie, what do you remember
Andy,
about
working?
Andy,
I think you had a couple of stunts in To Serve All My Days with the radiation zap, didn't you?
Well, I just kind of threw myself to the floor, like to my knees, death scene, dramatic, and then to the ground, and that was kind of it. And then luckily I handled it myself. Leslie didn't have to put on a Davy Jones wig and do it for me. I was able to die on my own there.
Did you have to do the patented check off screen?
Yeah, they wanted me to do that. Down to the ground.
Yeah,
that,
I mean,
said, it was really
that sounded more like a Star Wars, the famous, what do they call it, the Wilhelm scream?
That's too funny.
No, in New Voyages Phase 2, whatever you want to call it, there was no budget or no person that could be a stunt double. In this case, the actors did do their own stunts.
Oh, boy.
Have you guys talked about Leslie's stunt direction for the sword fight yet?
No. I mean, we just briefly mentioned it. Yeah, so that was one of the big fights in World Enough in Time is when basically my character beams off of the Romulan bird of prey. And then, you know, through technology and sci-fi, you know, they bring back George onto the transporter as this alternate universe Sulu. And he has no idea where he is. So he pulls out these swords and he's getting into the scuffle with Kirk and company. And Leslie was the one who coordinated all of that. It's a very short scene, but there's so much physicality. And it's such a dangerous scene because it's not only a cramped space, but it involves cutlery and prop swords and fighting and smoke. So Leslie was the one who really kind of, really just helped make sure that not only the stunts looked fantastic on camera, which they do, but that everyone was safe because safety is paramount when you're doing a scene like
that.
Yeah,
that was a real sword, wasn't it, John? I mean, that wasn't like a stunt sword. That was like a sharp, actual sword, wasn't it?
It was a stunt sword, but it was very heavy and it was still very sharp. And, in fact, one of the stories we actually tell in the book was the problem was the transporter set, which was in the attic, had a wood floor. And there's a scene in which George has to fling the sword, and the problem was it kept bouncing off of the floor. And it ended up being a potential projectile hazard. So Leslie had to figure out a way so that George could still, you know, do that dramatic moment with the sword, but not have it bounce up and hit anybody. And so that's detailed in the book. So those are just some of the small things that came up that really that's part of the challenge of filming in a place that's not really a real movie set.
And listen, guys, we are live right now. It's Sunday night. We'll be live here till 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Our phone number here is 646-668-2433. If you have a question for either Andy, John, or the one and only Leslie Hoffman, give us a call at 646-668-2433, and we'll get you live and on the air. So, Leslie, what you have any stories about either one of these two episodes or the stunt sword, using the stunt sword, for instance?
Well, the first thing that comes to mind was that there was a person. As you say, you get professionals who don't understand the logistics of, let's say, the sword fight, and they have this costume designer create this magnificent costume for George, except that it has a cape. Well, if you have a cape, how can you pull a sword out from behind your back? The cape would be covering the sword. I had to explain it to them that you got to lose the cape, which eventually was, I mean, I won't say it was a flat-out argument, but, you know, it's like, well, why can't
it
we
have
a cape?
It was pretty intense, I remember, Leslie.
Well,
we actually cover it in the book, so... That was a whole discussion, between Leslie, the costume person we had there, Kathy Pillsbury, and our director. And you know, George got involved in the discussion, too, because obviously he's the one making the action. But it's very true. That was one of the challenges. And he's wearing a very elaborate costume with a cape, which made it very difficult for him to withdraw the sword in one smooth motion. It's just an additional obstacle. So there were lots of different challenges with that particular scene, and
well,
we cover that in the book.
John,
The solution to that, I won't give it away, but Leslie was the one who came up with the solution, and it was a brilliant solution. It really sells the scene. It makes it even more of a dramatic flourish. So you either have to watch the episode or, better yet, read the book.
Another moment in the book. There's a funny moment in the book that George has to do a rehearsal.
Oh, there's a hilarious moment in the book.
And he has to rehearse the move that saves that scene. And he ends up
breaking Star Trek.
He breaks Star Trek in a way.
It's a great moment. And it's just one of the many slice of life behind the scenes moments that we capture and that we try to.
It's proof that you have to be flexible. You have to be so flexible on a fan film set.
Yeah. And keep in mind, I mean, we're shooting these scenes late at night. We're talking 3-4 in the morning, and so you've got the exhaustion on top of everything else. So again, credit to Leslie. I mean, she really, really made sure that not only the stunts looked really intense and looked real, but that everyone was safe.
Ken, do you have any questions for John or Andy about either one of these two episodes that you want to ask? I don't want you to feel left out.
The post I made in Trek Talking, the so-called infamous 10 degrees of shaking, when you were doing like any bridge or any other action, were you mindful of, let me see, we have to shake this way move around in a certain way so it we keep everything pretty well consistent.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, I think that was really what the director did, was to try to make sure that we emulated some of those famous, what I like to call shake, rattle, and roll moments. And so we have those in both episodes. I know for World Enough in Time, there's a really cool overhead shot of Andy and I grabbing our consoles as we lean forward. Andy, do you remember that when I think we were being rocked by the gravity wave.
Pyrotechnics going off? Yeah.
I remember, was it before the pyrotechnics? I don't think there was pyro in that particular scene, but it's an overhead shot of you and I grabbing our consoles and leaning forward at the same time because the ship's being rocked by gravity waves.
Okay, yeah, when we did stuff like that, typically the director would say 1, 2, 3, shake. And we'd even need to either tell beforehand to either lean forward or lean back. I didn't get to do a lot of it in those first two episodes, the Walter one or the George one, because my Chekhov, young Chekhov, is not on the bridge a whole lot. He's either aging into Walter or he's conspicuously absent in World Enough at Time. But in the shuttle scene in the Walter episode, I got to do a lot of shaking. And our second director, Gooch, he would say, shake to the right, shake to the left. And I would just, like a dancing monkey, I'd jolt to the right and I'd jolt to the left. And then my third episode of New Voyages, Blood and Fire, which was directed by David Gerald, which I briefly touch on in this book, this newest book. David, who has a bit of Star Trek pedigree, it was his first time directing. But he actually introduced with the bridge. I don't remember us doing this for the other two episodes, but on the bridge shakes, he would say 1, 2, 3 left or 1, 2, 3 right. And we would all just lean to right together in unison or lean to left in unison. There was no 10 degrees of shaking. It was just a big jolt. So we didn't do any kind of degrees on it. Though there was a debate at one point because the ship was supposed to be listing and falling to the left. And we had to stop as James, Captain Kirk, and David Gerald, our director, debated over would we all lean to the left or would we lean to the opposite of the way the camera was going. And that was a good 20-minute debate before we started rolling again. I forget how we finally settled it.
So wait, let me get this straight. Are we going to have making more fake Star Trek in a third book? Are we hearing this news?
I'm uncommitted to any. As far as John and I are concerned, we wrote two books, and we're very happy with the way the second book ends. I don't know that I'll ever have a chance to revisit the Blood and Fire episode in the future. I might, but I might not. So I briefly touched on Blood and Fire.
If there ever is one, then you'll be one of the first to know.
Yeah. But,
excellent.
I mean, as far as I'm concerned, it's never, 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 never in my ever, ever going to happen. Maybe.
Maybe.
but right now, yeah. I mean, we're just excited that we have these two books, and especially
yeah, right
since
now,
you know, the second one just came out, and it's just. I mean, honestly, this is a big moment because it was around this time, Jim, Leslie, and Ken, that 3 years ago, Andy and I first got into the discussion about writing this as a book. And originally, it was supposed to be one book. And because the story was so large, we did the unthinkable and basically split it up into two. So, which is why you got Making Fake Star Trek and now Making More Fake Star Trek.
Yeah, and right now we're both so exhausted that it's definitely at this moment a no way Jose for the three, but that's just in 2 years.
Now, were you surprised or pleased with the turnout to the first book compared to the turnout from this one? I know this one just came out on Valentine's Day, so you haven't had a lot of time to really let it soak in. But have you noticed a difference between the release of the first one versus the release of this one?
Well, it's been tremendous. I mean, the first one, I mean, we weren't sure exactly what the reaction was going to be, but it was overwhelmingly positive. And, you know, and just the response and the feedback we got, the reviews, we were just so pleased because writing about something that happened so long ago, especially when you didn't keep a journal of those days, it's not easy to do. And part of the process was Andy and I, we spent quite a bit of time because, you know, Andy and I like to describe it as like a pair of old men. I mean, we get on the phone and we relive our glory days because those were glory days for us. And we retell the same stories over and over. And that's really the only way we were able to remember enough to write these books was because we told each other these stories over and over. And it's funny because we talk to fellow cast and a lot of them don't remember a lot of what happened during those days because it was so long ago. And but Andy and I are kind of, as I like to say, we're stuck in this time loop where we just rehash these stories. And so we just think, you know what, it's time to put them down on paper. And the response has been tremendous, Jim. I mean, you know, we did a big thing last week where, and I think we mentioned it on your show that last week that, book one, we did a special promo where you could get the Kindle version for free, and we had hundreds and hundreds of people grab book one who hadn't read it yet. And meanwhile, people were buying the second book on pre-sale, and I mean, the response has been great. You know, we've been getting pictures and posting them on social media. People who just either downloaded the book, you know, for their Kindle or bought it for Kindle or have bought the paperback. So I'm just pleased. I mean, I'm really, really humbled by that. And it's amazing.
And I'd say for me, personally, the difference between book one and book two was at the end of book one, we knew that we both had to get back to editing book number two. We had a second book that was already mostly written. We had to finish writing it. We had to go through the you know, nearly year-long process of final editing. So the end of book two, meanwhile, is a relief. It's such a weight.
It was a long journey.
It finally feels like, oh my God, we're done.
Yeah.
And it makes a great
you.
Valentine's Day gift for your wife too, I might add.
Absolutely.
I can't
don't
do
let
any that.
Wife
I don't
go
know.
Home without making fake Star Trek.
I know my
but
wife
the
would
other
have
thing
just
I
loved
wanted, it. I want to say, Jim, is that you know, we also wrote book two so that if you read book one, you would be rewarded, you know, by having read the first story. But we also wanted to write book two so that it could stand on its own. And if someone wanted to just pick up book two, they wouldn't have had to read book one. You know, you won't get lost if you just pick up Making More Fake Star Trek. So that was kind of the balancing act in the second book.
Now, the sets where you guys filmed, are these the same ones that you can see up there right now in Ticonderoga, or are they different?
No, no. In fact, the sets have moved quite a bit. Originally, when New Voyages was a thing, I think the first two episodes were filmed at one location in Ticonderoga. It was only a partial
reconstruction. Well, it's a different location, but are they different sets? I mean, they would be the same sets, though, right?
Well, I don't know because they've been built and rebuilt so many times.
Yeah.
But
well,
what I can say is that when Andy and I filmed, They were in a former used car dealership in Port Henry, which is about 45 minutes away from Ticonderoga. Yeah.
But I will say this with certainty. The chair at Walters at Chickoff Navigation Station is the same chair that my ass was pressed against for three episodes of Star Trek New Voice. I can guarantee that to anyone visiting with that.
Leslie, do you know if the original set tour, are those the same sets that you guys filmed on originally, or have they been rebuilt and changed, you know?
Oops, having a hard time hearing you. The car dealership actually was I'll call it the second studio. The first thing, all I remember was they built like the flats on the second floor of a building. We had to carry them downstairs across the street to some other building in Ticonderoga, and that's where the first episode was shot.
The first two, right?
Like I say, then it was the used car dealership for either one or two episodes.
Both of them. To Serve All My Days and World Enough in Time.
Then there was that abandoned church. Were you guys around for the abandoned church?
Well, the church we filmed part of World Enough Time, the Romulan war, bird of prey scene, when Sulu and Chandris disembarked from the shuttle. We shot part of that at the church.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, there's a photo of John
and then
in the
actually,
book standing in front of a stained glass window.
Yeah.
This is so long ago, is that... I remember we had some shots that we actually did in Los Angeles.
Yes, we did. In fact, I'm glad you mentioned that, Leslie, because that was one of the interesting things about this, about World Enough of Time, is that the shuttle, there's a very intricate sequence where Sulu and Chandris fly a shuttle from the Enterprise to a damaged Romulan bird of prey and you know, do the hall crawl through that damaged bird of prey. And we shot that in three separate locations, Port Henry in Orlando, Florida, at the Dave School, which did the special effects. And then we also shot it in Chatsworth, California. So it was actually three locations that we shot that, and it was all cut together.
Yeah, so you know, what is the museum? There was never an episode of... New Voyages or Phase 2 shot. That has strictly been a museum. That has never been a studio that was used in the
past. Oddly enough, it's currently located at a grocery store that used to be called the Revolutionary Place to Shop. And when my wife and I, a girlfriend at the time, used to go camping up there 20 plus some odd years ago, that was the grocery store where you used to go and buy your food, because if you've ever been up there, there's not much in that area. So that was it, the grocery store. And now it's the Starship Enterprise, which is pretty cool, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so I wanted to ask you guys, would you ever come back and do another fan film, or are you pretty much, you've done it, been there, done that, and... move on.
I think John and I both done such, I mean, there are such incredible episodes. He got to work with George, I got to work with Walter, and I don't think that we could ever top that. I mean, unless we were to come back for Julianne and I to do an episode with Michelle Nichols, I don't think there's any way for us to top what we've done.
Yeah.
And also, you guys were involved in it before they had the Star Trek fan film guidelines as well. A lot of the stuff you did wouldn't be allowed.
Right, and that's the other
today.
Thing, Jim. And one of the reasons why we wrote these books was this was all in an era where fan films kind of had free reign and a lot of creative license. And nowadays, with the rules and the restrictions, you can't do what we did because, you know, we were doing essentially full-length episodes.
And they couldn't. If they wanted to do an episode with Michelle Nichols, they couldn't. That's actually against the rules now. as I understand it.
We're
can't work with anyone who's actually worked on Sochi.
So we wouldn't be able to, I don't think we'd be allowed to play Chekhov and Sulu in a fan film anymore.
No,
so,
no. And it can't be more than 15 minutes.
15 minutes?
You can't be
minutes?
A Star Trek character. And people like myself and other ones that, in case they don't want to be named, but, I mean, very well known in the Star Trek franchise, it's illegal for us to work on the fan film now.
Yeah, anyone who worked on real Star Trek can't work on fake Star Trek, as we call it.
And Andy
That's
might
right.
be might fall into that category because of his son. So you know.
That's true. He's a celebrity now.
It was his plan all along. He's keeping me from being Chekhov. Way to go, Jude.
Yeah. But Jim, I think what Andy was saying was absolutely correct. I mean, this was such a special time, and it's kind of like it's a time in your life that has passed, and you really look at it with a lot of reference. It's kind of like when you went to college, where you had a big milestone in your past. And these books are us kind of reliving those days, and I think that's a closed chapter. But it was a fun time for us.
Celebrating the bygone era.
You know, it's funny that you should mention that because I know exactly what you're talking about because I was running Star Trek conventions in Albany, New York, right at that exact same time. And Ken was involved with them with me as well. And I remember getting a phone call from an Elvis Presley impersonator by the name of James Colley. And he says to me, I hear you're having a Star Trek convention. And I said, yeah. And he says, well, I'm filming Star Trek episodes in Ticonderoga, New York. And I said, really? Okay, whatever. And he said, yeah, I'd like to have a table at your convention to promote my Star Trek fan film. And at that point in time, I'm thinking to myself, what is this dude got, like, cardboard sets with flashlights behind him? I mean, what is he talking about? But being a fan convention myself, we always embraced all the fan clubs and all the fans. And I said, sure, come on down. We'll give you a table in the lobby. You can set up and you can get the word out. So in a small little way, I did help you guys promote that Star Trek fan films up there in Ticonderoga in the little tiniest of ways. So that's pretty
cool. And now, Jim, you're doing a big thing and helping us get the word out on the books about them. So.
Thank you.
That's right. And you know what? I feel just like you guys because when I talk with Ken and I look back at what we did with Star Trek conventions back in the day, you could never do that today. You know, it was that doesn't happen anymore.
Yeah.
So, I was kind of indirectly involved. And now I help out in my own little way by trying to get the word out about your books. To as many people as possible through our Facebook page and our podcast. So I'm glad to help in any way
really
that I can.
Appreciate it. Yeah.
You guys are awesome,
thank you.
So I want to ask you guys another question, though, as insiders.
Yeah.
And something we've talked about on Trek Talking before, but I want your perspective. Why do you think it is that 98.9, almost every fan film is original Star Trek. Now there's a few out there that do TNG, Tommy Kraft did an Enterprise one, but like I said, over 99% of them are classic Star Trek. Why do you think that is? And they don't do Voyager, they don't do Deep Space Nine, they don't do TNG. It's always TOS. Why do you think that is? Do you think there's a reason for that?
I'd say two reasons. Number one, I think a lot of the people who created the fan films grew up on the original series, and so they have this special reverence for it. The second reason may be more practical, whereas you're talking about those later shows, the sets were so much more sophisticated. It might have been cost prohibitive to do something like a Deep Space Nine or a Voyager or even an Enterprise fan film. Whereas with the TOS, I think it may have been maybe easier to recreate that look and feel. I don't know. But that's my guess.
I'll go with that. That it's the baby boomers. It's it's the people that, you know, watch the original Star Trek.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe 10 years from now, maybe someone will be doing, you know, TNG, DS9, Voyager, but, you know, you've had people that have had their own career already, so they hopefully they have some money saved. And now they want to play Star Trek. They've had their whatever. Like I say, they've had their normal lifestyle, and now they're having their second childhood. Not to be taken the wrong way, but the chance to fantasize and be what they grew up on.
Yeah, I think that's probably closer to the answer than the set building thing, because I mean, again, also the technology behind the filming has grown in leaps and bounds.
Absolutely.
Where if you wanted to CGI Enterprise D, it probably wouldn't be that difficult to do.
Yeah, especially today, but back in 2004, 5, and 6, a lot more challenging. Even though there were a couple of fan films that actually did kind of the early blue screen, you know, with the computer effects. But today, with what you could do, much easier to recreate those environments.
Yeah, and mentioning that, Tommy Kraft did a Star Trek Enterprise fan film called Horizon, and we had him on our podcast. And the reason why I had him on is because it was Enterprise, and I've never seen a Star Trek fan film based on Enterprise. And
that's cool.
He said he daisy chained 25 laptop computers together.
Wow.
In order to get enough computer power to make all the green screen and CGI that he needed to make it work. And it looks fabulous. If you guys haven't seen it, check it out. Star Trek Horizon by Tommy Kraft.
Yeah.
That was a lot of fun. But
the other thing is that part of when we were doing New Voyages, part of it was that was the idea of recreating those environments that made it so that's what made it so thrilling for Andy and I was just being able to step onto an actual set, something that actually looked like the bridge. So that was really different. Whereas, as you mentioned, today it's all about computing power and being able to recreate these things virtually, which is phenomenal. It's such a different way of approaching it.
Now, I wanted to ask you, Leslie, having worked on real Star Trek and fake Star Trek, how do the two compare? Like when you were working with Andy and John on Star Trek and Ticonderoga versus working on real Star Trek, what was the difference? If you noticed, if any?
I'll say the professionalism of the actors is absolutely the same. The major problem is the budget. You know, where regular the franchise can spend $1 million to do an episode. You know, they were lucky to have $5,000 to do an episode of New Voyages. I mean, you really had to scrimp and save and you know, be creative to get what we were able to get on film.
I think that's
and
a
what
good
we
word
got on film
that.
Was amazing.
And if it's anything like working on a Star Trek fan convention like I did with Ken many years ago, everybody that's involved in it is 110% involved. They're only there for one reason, for their love of Star Trek. No one's getting paid. No one's making any money. Everybody just wants to give the fans the absolute best that they possibly can at any cost. And that's what it was like working on conventions with the awesome crew
that
I had.
Again, we sacrificed a lot, like, you know, to make sure that certain things were done properly. I remember the convention in Schenectady. I didn't leave the video room except to go pee.
That's right. We had video rooms back then.
I spent the entire 3 days inside the video room. I had absolutely no idea how the rest of the convention went.
Wow.
I didn't see anything. I didn't see any of the panels. I didn't see any of the stars. But that's, you know, we had such a dedication to what each one of us did that, I mean, this is what I did. So, you know, I didn't mind, really, because my idea was to try to make the room as best as I could.
My phone number, my personal private home phone number, was the convention hotline number that was on TV.
Wow.
24 hours a day.
That's dedicated.
And my phone would literally be ringing endlessly. I'd be answering the phone
That's
and answering
dedication.
Questions about Star Trek and blah, 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 the middle of the night, all at all hours. But I did it because I wanted to. And I'm pretty sure by looking at the fan films that you guys worked on, that the people that worked with you felt the same way.
Yeah.
You know, like you had to leave your homes and come all the way up to Port Henry. My God, what's up there? You know?
And for Andy, it was a lot longer of a trip than for me. It was a drive for me, a long drive for me. But for Andy, it was what, like a cross-continental flight.
All the way up there just to work on a Star Trek fan film. That says a lot about the character of you guys and how much you love what you're doing. I think it speaks praises about you guys.
Thank you.
It really does.
Also,
it does.
I mean, and we also talk about a lot of the people who weren't in front of the camera, and there were so many of them, Jim, and we point that out in the book because we really wanted to make sure that we told part of their story too. Just, you know, people like Leslie, people like Linda Cleveland. I mean, there were so many people who worked so hard behind the scenes. And not just when we were filming, but throughout the year, you know, helping build the sets and make the costumes and really help finance the production. I mean, these were the people who were there long before Andy and I joined. And
folks
and
like
they
Gary
were
Evans,
the unsung
J-Lo,
heroes.
The Mail Hot. While John and I had to travel long distances to get up there, those folks lived out there, but they donated time and money. You know,
money, yeah.
Gary Evans mortgaged
year
his
round,
house
too.
To pay rent for the sets to exist. And the Clevelands put off necessary surgeries so that they could help finance and pay the rent for the sets so that we could shoot there and we could do an episode. So these people sacrificed so much, and we just wanted to give them a little bit of, we wanted to
credit
give them
and
their
moment.
Yeah, their
we really wanted to give them the credit because – because, you know, it's the stories you don't hear about very often are so many people who work behind the scenes who make something like this happen.
Now,
it's easy
before
to praise the folks
in front
of the
camera. Why don't you guys let everybody know how they can get their hand out? Is the free making fake Star Trek, did that offer end already?
Yeah, the night we were on your show, Jim, that was the last evening. So that was, but you can still buy the book. And so you can buy Making Fake Star Trek for Kindle or paperback, and the new one is Making More Fake Star Trek paperback and Kindle. It's all available on Amazon, or you can go to our website, makingfakestartrek.com.
And if you want
to
read the first book and you don't want to spend any money, the first book is on Kindle Unlimited, if you're a Kindle Unlimited.
Yeah, if you're a Kindle Unlimited subscriber. And it's actually available at a couple of libraries, too, so you can check it out.
Including one in Ticonderoga.
Yeah, and if it's not, you know what you can do? You can go to your library and say, hey, look, I would love to get Making Fake Star Trek or Making More Fake Star Trek. Let your library know, because that's something that, you know, that helps us as well. So if you want to check it out of the library and your library doesn't have it, let your librarian know.
Excellent. And I'll tell you what, I'm going to make an offer that I made on Trek Talking as well. I have a couple of copies here of Star Trek Year 5, issue number 1. And anybody that orders either Making Fake Star Trek or Making More Fake Star Trek and messages me on our Facebook page at Trek Talking and Beyond and says, hey, I just picked up their new book, and you can send me a copy of that sales receipt with the credit card and sales information, of course, copied out so that I don't get it and steal all your stuff, because that's the kind of guy I am. I'm a hardened criminal. But if you white out all that information, I will send you a copy of Star Trek Year 5, issue number 1, as my way of saying thank you for supporting these guys and buying their books.
Oh, that's great.
Thank check
you,
that
that's
out
awesome.
If you get a chance. I made that offer on Trek Talking when these guys were on, and I'll make it right now on Stunt Trek with me, Leslie Hoffman, as well, because I'm not biased. I'm an equal opportunity Trek fan. So if you pick up either copy of their book, the first one or the second one, just message me at Trek Talking and Beyond and say, hey, Uncle Jim, I got their book, and here's my receipt, no credit card numbers, and I will send you a copy of Star Trek Year 1, issue number 1, which is pretty cool if you haven't checked that out.
That's
so
great.
Excellent. So before we have to go, anything new that you guys are working on besides the book that you want to let people know about?
Well, I mean, right now we just finished the book. We just released it. And so now we're just letting people know about it and coming on shows like yours, Jim. And, you know, again, it's a thrill to be here and to catch up with Leslie and to talk with you and Ken and just share memories. And so what we're doing now is just letting people know about both books, and they're both available now on Amazon.
Yeah. Next, we've been promoting and then otherwise letting our brains relax after 3 years of just making big Star Trek.
There's a lot of walking down memory lane and a lot of writing.
You know, yeah. I think it would be so great if James Colley would bring you guys up to Trek Conroga when they do it in August at where it is now in the Revolutionary Places shop, because I'd love to meet you guys and get you guys to sign a copy of the book for me and meet you in person. I know Andy was at Star Trek Las Vegas, and you got a chance to meet Charles because Charles lives out in Las Vegas. But I think it'd be great if James Colley brought you guys up to Trek Conroga and you could actually go on
the
Enterprise. And because I went up there, 2 years ago was the first time I went up there. And when I walked on the sets, I was blown away. I felt like I was on the Enterprise. I was just like, wow.
That's a great experience. And that's how we felt when we first stepped on the sets in Fort Henry.
Making those incredible. Episodes is like a dream come true. Yeah.
I mean, it really is. If you guys are listening, if anyone's listening and you haven't gone up to the original set tours up in Ticonderoga, I can't tell you enough how much fun it is and how cool it is to actually visit the bridge, see the sick bay, visit engineering, get beamed up on the transporter, go to the Captain Kirk's quarters, Spock's quarters, the ready room, all the hallways, and engineering, Jeffrey's tubes. It's all there, and it's all laid out the way it would have been on the TV show, and it's spectacular. It's worth the trip. So at any rate, we are out of time. So I want to say thank you to John and Andy for hanging out with us and Leslie and Ken and talking about your new book with us.
Thank you so much for having us.
And let me ask you, before you go, can you guys do the voices for us?
Absolutely. We would love to do the voices. Mr. Sewell, how are you today?
Oh, I'm doing great. How are you, Pavel?
Oh, absolutely wonderful to be on Stunt Trek.
Oh, I love you guys.
Speed ahead.
Oh, my.
Thank you so much, Jim.
You guys are awesome. Thanks for coming on the show. And you guys are welcome anytime. Thank you very much for being such great fans and letting people know what it's like to work on a fan film. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Thank you, guys.
And thank you, Ken, for hanging out with us. It's great to have you, Ken.
Yeah, well, like I said, I enjoy all this because, like I said, it gives me a chance to remember, what we did, what everybody else did. So it gets the newer fans it gets the knowledge of what happened before to the next generation, to the newer fans. So that helps out Trek.
I agree. I agree. I think it's up to us old folks to let the young folks, know what's going on. And of course, we couldn't do the show without the one and only Leslie Hoffman. Thanks for hanging out tonight, Leslie.
Pleasure as always.
I know. We didn't get to talk about Planet of the Apes or Stunt Eggs or Stunt Tribbles, but we had a great time. And we'll be back with you guys again next Sunday. Same bat time, same bat channel. Leslie and myself and the Admiral will be back having some fun talking about Stunt Treks. So just remember, Star Trek fans are the best fans. You guys are awesome. And we'll talk to you all again next Sunday. Thanks for tuning in and have a great night, everybody. Good night.
Yeah, good night, everybody.
Good night.
Let's see what's out there. Engage.